At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Ladies, gentlemen, NBs, this is the Eat Sleep Elite podcast, your weekly AW review. I'm right now. I'm the Duke of Derps, also known as Bane Duke. This is my good buddy Charlie, and this is a weekly wrestling podcast talking about AW. If you're joining us for like the first or second time, like, because you happen to tune into our all-in coverage, well, you're in luck because we're talking about All Out this week, and we all have our predictions during the new section of this podcast. I believe Charlie, I usually win. It's usually before the reviews is usually when we do it, right? Or is it after? It doesn't really matter. It'll be at some point in this show. You'll get our fucking All Out predictions. I promise you. It'll happen. But if it doesn't happen, then take my permission to call us absolute shitbags on Twitter at Bane Duke. Anyway, and that's it's Sleep Elite. Believe that to my Twitter, because that's all we know. There's no interactions there, so get me up in the algo. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, Charlie, I mean, fuck. I mean, we talked about All In. Great show. Yep. All awesome Out. Show. We've talked about before on this show how All Out and All In are kind of a little too close together for both our likings, and probably the likings of probably everybody involved, but to be honest with you, it's probably like a challenge that they like enjoy accepting. For me, it just makes this couple of weeks of the year just chaotic as hell. So, you know, like, but
Yeah, last year they were 6 days apart. At least this year they're 13 days apart, but still it's...
So they did take a lesson away from
it. Yeah.
And that's how we like it here, though, you know? But anyway.
Extra tight.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's really good stuff, though. I mean, we'll have some really good stuff to talk about from Dynamite and various other shows during the reviews this week. This is episode 15 of season 4 of ESE. First of all, how are you doing today, Charlie? I haven't let you talk hardly at all yet, but...
I guess we'll jump straight into
favorites.
Yeah, we had a pretty fun week of wrestling, and yeah, you alluded it. The previous week we had the big Cardiff shows, so we'll hit our favorite from that real quickly, but then we'll hit this week's. But
Cardiff.
Yeah, so from Cardiff, my favorite that week was a match on Collision. We had Big Bill versus Hook. I thought the crowd made us care about this match much more than I ever did on paper. They turned Big Bill into, like, the fucking biggest babyface on the planet. He was doing everything in his power to turn that crowd away and turn him against
him. It's so funny about Big Bill, because, like, me and you and everybody else that watches love Big Bill. Big Bill loves Big Bill. Tony Khan loves Big Bill. Everybody that works with Big Bill seems to love Big Bill, because they give him a lot in the ring, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And yet they just, for some reason, don't push him, but everybody seems to be okay with it, you know what I mean? Like... That's fine. He's been a tag team champion, technically, you know what I mean? So he's got that accolade, but obviously we'd like him to win something eventually, but it sucks. Yeah. It sucks for right now that he's kind of stuck in the vortex, but, you know, it'd be better than him not be doing anything. So I can't
exactly
be upset
about
it,
his partner, Ricky Starks, from that tag team, who we haven't seen since. So, yeah, no, this was really fun. It was just a fun little match. So definitely worth checking out if you did.
No, I think that's the sad thing about Ricky. I think if he goes to NXT or something like that, he's going to have to kind of build up a whole new thing, because, I mean, yeah, he can do the same thing he's been doing and it'll work, but it's going to take them seeing it and then getting it over and then them liking it. And like it was for here. It's not just going to be an instant thing just because he's an AEW guy. Look at fucking Ethan Page. I don't think that championship reign is like super exciting or anything, you know, like, but everyone's like, oh my God, we got an AEW guy. Got to make him champion. It's like, no, man, just let him cook.
Let him cook.
He's good.
And then this week, my favorite this week was, we're going to Rampage.
Rampage,
the return
baby.
Of Konosuke Takeshita taking on Commander Leo Rush and the Beast Mortos. Okay. We open this off with just an incredible strength contest with Beast and Takeshita.
Hold on, I gotta find the meme. Hold on.
Yeah, right. And Mortos ends up slapping the piss.
Oh my God, a couple of times.
But yeah. Leo Rush versus Commander, they jump into their fucking lucha counters. You got the cartwheels, you name it. That was a lot of fun. Leo's using his speed. He's really taking it into Takeshita. It's a fun spot. Commander's hitting his rope spots. They're really beautiful. We follow by, he hits a tornado, and then Beast Mortos hits a tornado falling right after it. It'll get you every time. It's so good. And I got to tell you, some great, great Excalibur calls. He literally sounded like he's in his prime in this match. Like it's the PWG vibes. He's getting overly excited about everything, and it carries you through the match. When he is like he is in this fucking mood that he was calling this match, it's so much fun. And there was he was clearly in that mood for a while, because there's a similar thing during the Ishii and Adam Page match on Dynamite where I'm like, this is our guy. Like I want to see more of this Excalibur. It's fun. And then I wrote, Mortos again slaps the dog shit out of Commander. Dude. He was laying the boom on him, dude. It was fucking brutal.
Bro, does Commander owe fucking Mortos money, man?
Callis said he gets physically excited by Beast Mortos.
Oh, calm down, Don. Put that shit in your pants, Don.
I gotta say,
I knew Takeshita was winning this match, but there was still 100%. there was an urgency the way they did this that I was like, is he winning the match? I don't know. Mortos could steal this. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't think Mortos was winning, but there was moments where I was like, oh, who's gonna...
It's that, even if it's a millisecond, that suspension of disbelief, you know, that's what, as Dax puts, that's what it's all about.
Yes, that is what they're trying to do. And the fact that they got me there just with the wrestling without anyone saying a word, you know what I mean? Other than the commentators, obviously, but like, you know, that's good shit right there.
Some really good beast chants I liked. Takeshita has a 19-inch neck. That's what Callis told us. Do with that what you will.
We might need a measuring contest Scrap.
More Takeshita and Beast, just physical blows in it.
Long, thick neck.
I feel like these crowds, they already love Takeshita, right? They're going and they're wanting to love Beast Mortos. Yes. I really think these two newest luchadors in Beast Mortos and Hologram, AEW, might have struck fucking gold. Look, if you're having your two OG luchadors walk out the door, right? And you want to replace them, which is what it feels like. I mean, you can look at that different ways you want to, but I don't know. You're off to a really good start in making the crowd care about them. Just Commander going crazy with his deja vus, a really good German suplex and Spanish fly combo off the top rope. Commander hits a top rope Frankensteiner on Beast, just unbelievable. Mortos again kills Leo Rush with a spear. Takeshita hits a knee on Mortos, Blue Thunder, Falcon Arrow on Commander, takes the dub in just an awesome, awesome Rampage match. But yeah, anything else you wanted to add from that? And what was your favorite from Cardiff and your favorite from this week?
Absolutely. Let me just scroll to further down so I can, because my notes are like, you know, I got some long, thick notes. You know what I mean? Yeah, just like Commander is a freak. Mortos is a freak meat, you know, and just commenting on the thunder in the hands of fucking the Beast Mortos. My God, you know,
I feel like you could hear those from the fucking, it, like if there was three sections, top, you could hear those, like, from the third section.
Right, yeah, if there was enough people still in the stadium, yeah, you probably heard, if you were walking down the hallway, like getting like a soda, you probably heard that shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like at the concession stand or whatever, like I bet you fucking hear that shit there because it was probably quiet enough in the rest of the building. You know what I mean? Like,
oh yeah.
But
that's the power on those things. You can hear Gunther's chops from the third section.
Oh, 100%.
It adds that much more, you know, verisimilitude, if you will, to the wrestling.
Ooh, we haven't used that one in a while. Shout out Robert Meyer Burnett.
Hell yeah.
But Leo's music is a vibe. I hadn't really paid attention to it since they gave him, because they gave him new music when he came back. I don't know if it's his New Japan music or what it is, but it is fucking vibe.
Yeah, I'm not like sure because he got rid of the Super Juniors music he used 2 years ago.
Yeah, so I don't know if this is what he's been running since then, or if this is just something new that they came up with because they want to. I love, though, that this to me kind of confirms, Leo is here to stay. I think they probably re-signed Leo. Leo is going to do some work with AEW for a good long while, at the very least. And maybe that leads to a long-term contract for Leo, you know what I mean? And I would really like that because I think he's still got a lot of time left in his career to do a lot. I think everybody in this match has just got eons of potential, you know, and just really fun stuff. Yeah, so let's get into my stuff. So for last week, we had a Kazuchika Okada taking on Claudio Castagnoli for the AEW Continental Championship. I wasn't sure we were going to get this match, like, because of two reasons. One, I just didn't know if these two were going to cross paths. I just didn't know if, like, Claudio is one of those guys that, like, you know, because of how little he's used sometimes, you could see him just being like, okay, I've had a really good match with this person. I'm just going to hang him up today because I'm just not getting the use that I want. Or maybe goes back to WWE or something, or just, you know, just doesn't show up for a while, you know? So that's just something that could happen. Like, Claudio could just never get a shot for the championship at Okada. You know what I mean? That could have just happened. Could have just passed him by. You know what I mean? Right. So there's that. But I also just thought, like, I just didn't think Claudio had the wins right now to get this shot. Right. I guess I must not know anything because clearly he did. You know what I mean? But this could be a best of seven series. I mean, this was super fun. I mean, time limit draws are a little bit brutal sometimes, but I feel like this is one where I don't want Claudio getting beat here because he's actually been on the run of pretty solidly good matches recently. You know what I mean? He's got some momentum, and I don't think that you should be beating Okada, obviously, anytime soon. So, you know, like,
really good use of just a time limit draw here.
Absolutely. Should we have spaced it out a little bit from the recent one? Probably, but I mean, I don't know. You know, what do you do in this scenario other than not book this match, which obviously, given the fact that I said I was surprised that we got it.
It's hard because for this specific title, you know, only having 20 minutes, it feels like a draw should be more common, but you don't want it to run into your other titles getting draws for, you know, you don't want that.
Yeah. I'm with you on that. Really did enjoy the match, though. Really good stuff. Should have been on the pay-per-view, if we're being honest, but the fact that we got it is still good.
Mm-hmm.
And so good stuff there. You know, Okada, obviously very good wrestler. And for this week, I was really, really into the match that Buddy Matthews had with Commander on Collision. And Commander, again, really great week for him this week. Super underutilized guy. Yep. Super underutilized guy, but, you know, is also super really, really talented. And Buddy is one of those wrestlers that can give anybody on the roster their best match on any given night. You know what I mean? I don't know if this is Commander's best match. It's pretty up there, though, I'm pretty sure. This is really fun. Buddy does a really, really, really dominant, like, control spot during this match that I just was, like, fucking gushing over because he's, like, he's doing, like, body scissors and he's, like, fucking locking them up in weird pins and holds and he's just, you know, being an absolute menace to him out there. Picks up a very, very clean win. Not a bad match here at all. And then the through line of the story here is, you know, Brody comes down to the ring. He's like, yo, good job, man. And then the MXM, you know, cut in and say they're going to challenge the House of Black. Then they need to prepare to get House of Black. And goddamn if that's not hilarious. But yeah, so that sets up a match between House of Black and MXM. I believe I'm assuming it's going to be on Collision because they said Friday night.
Only match announced for Collision so far.
So that's their Collision match for this week. That'll probably be the main event, you would think. And And if it's not, it'll probably open. Either way, it'll be a marquee match on Collision. And so that should be really fun. Charlie, did you have any thoughts on this match?
Yeah.
Or, you know, the whole thing as a whole, I guess, you know, because I really enjoyed this.
Yeah, love the angle after. I want more of these tag matches.
When it's a Collision, you never expect there to just be like a banger match with a little bit of a story intrigue too, you know, like.
Absolutely. And, you know, this was, you know what this felt like with Buddy Matthews sometimes, what we get? It's like he's wrestling his 205 Live matches that fucking no one watched, but yet he's doing it against even more talented people like Commander. And they're able to be free with these
matches.
You're
right, dude, bro. He used to always get these look on his face during those matches where he was just like, how do I beat this guy? He has that during this match, dude. And he's like, what do I... He's doing the wrestling math.
And you name it, they do those big splash spots, whether it's the Buddy's knees on the fucking while they were on the ropes, right? That fucking it was like a Frankenstein when Buddy was also in the ropes and he planted his ass on the fucking mat. Buddy's face planted on the mat from Commander. That was just, they had those big splash spots that work so well. The crowd cared, which makes me care even more as usual, right? And just another home run on a fucking incredible Collision. You know what? We can talk about it off the top, too. Just about the week as a whole. AEW right now, it has to be mentioned. They are fucking cooking week to week right now in their television shows. Because I think every single Collision from Arlington and then the one after in Cardiff were fucking great. Collision has been phenomenal. And then you take that plus Dynamite's on this hell of a run. And then my favorite was from Rampage this week, where we had that awesome, you know, Takeshita match. Stuff like that's got to be called out when it is this good. And I think AEW is seriously
on fire. It would be insane right for me to say that's Takeshita's first Takeshita quality match he's had not in Japan this year in AEW. Like, that's not been that earlier run that he had leading up to the Will Ospreay match. Like,
well, it's hard because it feels like, while it does feel like that, it's only, you know, the first, it's only blinking. He just had the tag match against Sting, and, you know, he just had wrestled Darby Allin. So it did happen this year. It's just, it feels like it's been far too long. You know, it feels, I mean, we have one of the best wrestlers on the planet. He's beaten Kenny Omega twice in this company. And yet it feels like we're still looking for a way for him to fucking push up the card. You know, I agree, though. That's why it feels like that. But yeah, it's so nice to see him back and unleashed. Did that match have any specific stakes to it that I'm missing?
I kept trying to figure out what they were, and I never heard the commentary. It's just a four-way match. My assumption is, like, it's going to be momentum for Takeshita to carry.
Maybe well, they better only get him have on to get a left. Let's start with that.
You got 1 week, so good luck.
They got 1 week. We need to put him against Okada for that title then.
Really, realistically, you have tomorrow, because you probably should do it by Rampage. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, which as of right now, he's not booked for tomorrow. Thanks. I got to imagine a match like this puts him on All Out. But let's get into the news. We have a little bit of news here this week. A little contract mania. So, actually, nothing to do with AEW that I saw, unless I'm missing something, but Odyssey Jones has been released from WWE. It's still a little speculation on why and what happened. Again, Odyssey was someone that was called up from NXT, never really used. They just put him in a storyline this past, like, 2 weeks or something, and now he's released, and it's not looking like it's because of a good reason. So it sounds like he had some domestic violence happen, and while there's technically no proof, whatever WWE saw, they released him right away. So,
damn.
Yeah.
Yikes.
And then Giselle Shaw was granted her release from TNA Wrestling. So it's just a little contract mania stuff. Ricochet, he had an interview on The Ringer, and he said he blames himself for how the WWE run ended. He went on to say, you can place blame anywhere, but I just blame myself. That's the only person I can blame, because that's all you can do. Obviously, I didn't do something. I don't know what it was. For me, again, frustrating and maybe not the word. But again, my last couple of years, I met my future wife there. I made mad connections. The locker room was always awesome. As far as creatively, I mean, yeah, there would have just been more I'd like to do. Just again, mostly for the fans that want to see me do stuff, not even for me. It's like we've talked about it a lot.
I felt that was how he felt for a long time. Like, you could just tell by his demeanor in the ring that he knew that we wanted something different from him, and that he knew he couldn't do it because it's not what they wanted him to do, you know? Because and I've made this argument before. Maybe there were people that were around Will Ospreay around the time that he was in New Japan. And maybe, unlike Will Ospreay, he listened to those people a little more than he should have to protect his body, right? And maybe that was the right decision at the time. Because if he had done that, maybe he would have blown through everything they could have possibly done in like a couple of months and then not be able to wrestle the rest of his life, right? Because the WWE can just throw stuff at you like that if you want them to. But they don't always, you know? And so I do think there is a probable argument that he just has that PWG style of wrestling philosophy within him that a lot of people in AEW seem to have, and that he can see what they're doing over there. And he could see that that's more akin to what he used to do on the indies. And maybe he just feels a little bit more camaraderie with that. But I think it's also possible that creative just really didn't have anything for him. I mean, I don't know what.
Yeah, I mean, they
I do imagine it's going to be a struggle for AEW creative as well. Like, what do you make the guy who is in the company that has got all the best, like, insane in ring athletes in the world in AEW, right? What makes this guy stand out? And that's going to take them coming up with a character that we can believe in Ricochet. So,
which he seems pretty positive he can come up with something based on his, like, Instagram posts and he posts videos just kind of similar to Mustafa Ali when he was released. Like, yeah, I can do this. So
God, that's Tony Khan's biggest fumble right there.
I would love to get him. I think he's wanted to do his own thing first. We've never heard anything about the two being connected. So Ricky Stark said he's never turned down AEW creative storylines. He took to Twitter because people were, like, you know, starting to make up shit about him. Again, I don't think it's that deep, everyone. I mean, I really think he's just, he knows.
I love that that's the assumption. And granted, I guess Miro does allegedly do that, right? But how much of that is actually even true, right? You know what I mean? Like, we would have to hear it from them themselves, right? To know truly if it's Miro, if it does that. You know, and I have no idea. Maybe that is the case. Maybe there are people doing that. And I'm sure there are to an extent, right? I mean, there's people we haven't seen in literally years. So maybe that's what's happening, right? But I'm not surprised by this news at all because I don't think Ricky would turn something down. I think even if it was bad, he'd at least give it an opportunity to get off the ground. We've seen him be in bad storylines before. A guy was stuck with Jericho.
He turned the best out of a Danhausen storyline. I mean, come on.
People just need to stop jumping to conclusions so much with wrestling just because you think you don't. Unless the guy tells you, you don't.
Shit up. Like, clearly that was made up, and it's like they're just trying to find reasons.
They want clicks, let's be honest.
It's people searching for a reason just because, like, look, if he wants to go wrestle somewhere else and he's just, you know, I think if there was stuff for him right now, they would give him stuff. But again, I think people are just, you know what it is? I think it's people butthurt he's leaving. And it's one of those things. They don't.
Again, that's another assumption that we make based on the fact that he hasn't been on TV. But like, we often will find out that someone's way more injured than we realize. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure. But the assumption that he is leaving is making people butthurt. So you see what I'm saying? It's just one of those things. It's we see.
I mean,
it all
if you're going that deep, I think you got issues. I'm gonna be honest with
exactly.
you.
Exactly. It's that's what it is. And they go and attack the wrestler, just like people attack those actors that have a show they don't like. It's like, dude. Just chill out. October 17th, get ready. Battle of the Belt 12.
Most anticipated event of the summer.
I can't fucking wait. Following a collision. Live from Stockton, California. Have you any idea where that is?
The Young Bucks will be there for sure.
They're not even on the fucking paper. All right, let's, nice. All right. Not that this always matters. We got FTR, Darby Allin, Jack Perry, Thunder Rosa, John Moxley, Jericho, Willow, and Orange Cassidy on the poster for the show. So keep an eye out for that for the Collision and Battle of the Belts taping. Ty Mello says she's medically cleared to return. Hope to see her soon. Strickland's contract has caused a lot of controversy this week because a report came out that some people are not happy that he resigned. And that he, quote, he's ruining the landscape because of how much he's getting paid. He's ruining the landscape. So, and then.
So racism.
So someone else put out a fucking tweet saying, I doubt that actually happened. Some fucking wrestling person. And Swerve quoted it and said, want to see the text. I love Swerve. But yeah, he's ruining the wrestling economy by how much he got paid. It's like,
God, somebody, if anyone deserves to do that, it's fucking Swerve.
He has fucking earned it because you know what? How long did we hear about, oh, you're this indie wrestler? Well, we'll give you a WrestleMania moment, brother, but we're not going to pay you dog shit.
No dog shit money for you, buddy.
Yeah, it's like, well, our wrestlers can get paid now. That's the way it is.
Tony Khan's a billionaire. He can afford to pay everybody
more. He can afford it. They can afford it. I mean, who got that massive fucking contract a couple years ago that everyone's like geeking out about? I think it was Becky Lynch, and it's like,
MJF
has earned it. So it's like Roman Reigns, whatever he's getting paid, he earned it. Because guess what? You still see him all over fucking like
that guy TikTok. Went through 10 years of being fucking booed by everybody on the planet while he was supposed to be the biggest fucking baby face in history. And then finally convinced the people in the back to turn himself heel so that he could become the greatest wrestler of all time in a lot of people's eyes. You know what I mean? Like,
easily one of the biggest heels, greatest heels of all time. What he's done.
Certainly. So, definitely the biggest in WWE history,
it's like
probably.
He earned his pay. Swerve has earned his pay. MJF, you name it. They've all earned it. Mercedes especially. Good for her.
She earned her pay over like multiple runs over the WWE where they just pissed all over her grave, basically. You know what I mean? Like,
So
buried her and then fucking pissed on it.
Let's jump into the actual.
Oh, you want to win the world title for a week and then lose it again the next week on Raw? It's fucking Charlotte. Good job.
Yeah.
So, that was crazy.
We'll get into this week where you're going to cover Ring of Honor, and then I will be covering Dynamite and Rampage, and then you'll be covering Collision, and we'll end this thing predicting the six all-out matches that we have right now. Again, I'm sure we're going to get more, but, you know, it's the way it works. Is we're not going
to... To be honest with you, with the whole predictions thing, that used to be much more of a thing on the video podcast, because, like, we'd show breakdowns of everybody's match picks and stuff like that, and, like, we wouldn't necessarily do who's going to win at the end of the year, who's got them. We tried, we thought about doing that one year, but, like, it just always got too complicated, you know what I mean? Like, because there's so many pay-per-views and blah, 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 right? So, and inevitably, it would lead to people picking weirdly because they want to try and get ahead, but then you did just have people with... Well, you know, inevitably what happens under that, Charlie, right? One person just picks the logical picks and wins everything because they don't lose any picks. You know what I mean? Like, and everybody else takes a risk and loses and gets behind, a couple points behind. It's why those kinds of predictions are fun, but, you know, they're risky. But anyway, yeah. So let's talk about some Ring of Cone from, I actually don't know where this was filmed. I have no idea off the top of my head.
The last show from Arlington.
Copy. So this was the last Arlington taped Ring of Honor. Copy. All right, so we opened up the show with Athena and Billy coming out, and Athena's just beating up Aaliyah James. She got sent to the slaughterhouse. I think Ring of Honor's got so much potential, man. I think one day it's going to be super amazing. I don't think today's that day, unfortunately. Athena gets confronted by Abaddon, still scared of them. There's some horror movie vibes to this. Even the way that, like, the big Frankenstein walk that Abaddon was doing here, you know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, there was, like, a little fun moment where she being Athena, tripped like it was a horror movie. Like, they did a lot of little fun stuff here. You could tell they're just having a blast with this one, you know what I mean? Like, and that's what I love to see, so, you know, we'll see what more happens there. But I love the little flavors of that stuff. We could get really more into that stuff, too, if they wanted to, because Abaddon, I assume they are a very intelligent person based on how they have done, I believe, their own makeup for this whole thing. So just being able to do that alone takes a certain level of intelligence, and then being able to extrapolate this character from nothing, presumably, other than inspiration, you know, like, it's kind of a whole new thing. It kind of, like, takes bits from here and there, you know. And it's pretty
very
cool.
Very impressive.
Yes, so excited to see what they do there. But, you know, obviously they didn't give this, like, a ton of time, and I think that's something that they sometimes do. Sometimes they'll give Athena a segment, but they won't give her a super duper long segment because they don't want to take away from what they could do with other people on the show. So, and we went straight from that into another opportunity for somebody, which was Sydney Akeem taking on Johnny TV. I did think it had some, like, weird timing or something in it. I mean, one, fucking Johnny TV landed on his fucking dome, you know?
Yeah.
God damn, I hope he's okay, you know? That shit was crazy, though. But it wasn't, like, an offensive match or anything. I just, you know, not the greatest first showing for Sydney. I don't think that was his fault, necessarily. I don't think it was Johnny TV's fault, either.
Yeah, Sydney right now is one of my favorite independent wrestlers out there. And they didn't let him do... He didn't do any of his big moves, any of his really... Like, he's a Cirque du Soleil fucking, like, traveling professional for years. Like, this guy is a world-class gymnast. And he didn't really get a chance to do much of his big stuff. The stuff that I've never seen in wrestling outside of, you know, in Mexico. So I'm hoping we see him again. But Johnny's... what I'm taking away from is Johnny's in current storyline, so...
Yeah, they didn't know how to have him lose, so, yeah.
Yeah, that drop on his head, I saw that even on Twitter still again after we watched it. Like,
oh, yeah, no, it's bad.
That kind of went viral.
Brutal bump.
Yeah.
That's a man that doesn't usually fuck up like that either. Occasionally he does. You'll see him take a brutal one every now and then, you know, but that's a move. I've seen that man hit 1,000 times. I've never seen him land on his head before. That's crazy, you know?
Yeah, at least not
that. Might have been his first time ever doing that, you know what I mean? Like, straight up, man, you know, hey. It's going to happen sometimes, though. He's just lucky he didn't compress his neck. You know what I mean? Guy's got a thick-ass fucking torso and legs.
Yeah. Neck.
But, yeah, so...
19-inch neck like Takeshita, right?
Yeah, indeed. He needs something. Anyway, but, you know... Yeah, so in the next match, the soul of a man was wrenched from his living body because Lance Archer was sent from the realms of hell to remind us that everybody dies. Yeah. We heard from STP. Style spoke to Angelico in Spanish. Setting up the pure title match for later in the show, basically, you know. Good stuff. Rachel Ellering took on Mina Shirakawa. Gave it a lot more time than I was expecting them to give this here. And it's not like Mina wouldn't know who Rachel is. I'm sure she knows, you know what I mean? Like, but, like, it's also one of those things where I just didn't know what they were going to do with this. And they actually gave them a little bit of time. They got some really good stuff in here. And I think Rachel always pretty much impresses me when she's out there. So, you know, there's nothing to complain about here. You know, Mina just picking up some wins. Do you think... The reason why Mina's been picking up steam on TV recently, do you think, I guess this isn't technically TV, but on different various shows, do you think they're going to do something with her on AEW TV? Do you think that the buildup was just the Mariah storyline?
This week that she's even moved to America, so perhaps she is going to become...
A full-time AEW chick? That would be cool. I'm down. She's really, really good. She's over with the crowd like crazy, you know what I mean? So she definitely would have a place here, so I would definitely be down with that. Top Flight took on some jabberoonies here and did a lot of little flashy stuff, you know. And I was just kind of thinking at this point, I really hope we're not just having them on Ring of Honor just to have matches. I think I've made this complaint about Top Flight before. Especially because they're kind of like, it feels like they're getting some momentum with them, giving them this whole gimmick and all that. Even if they came up with it, just giving them the ability to do this and try this thing out with Layla Gray. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not sure. I just want them to have a long-term plan with it, you know? But either way, EJ and Duka was back on Ring of Honor. Got a pretty quick and decisive win here. Still want to see more from this guy, but, you know, this is a guy that just the name alone, I think, could sell him. So if they can get him to, like, be really consistently good in the ring, I think we could have something here. Any thoughts on EJ and Duka here, Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, let's let him keep getting these reps in Ring of Honor and see where it takes him.
We've done that with a couple people before.
He's got the viciousness. I mean, the massive spine buster, you name it. I mean, he's got something.
Look, we did this with Preston Vance for like 3-4 months, and it resulted in Preston Vance becoming a pretty well put together wrestler by the end of all of it. So I think this guy at this early of a stage of his career has plenty of opportunity to figure that out. Rachel Ellering was backstage, and she got interrupted by Harley Cameron, who called her a kid. So I guess that must be the storyline they're going with for Rachel going forward, is her versus Harley. So this must be the main reason they brought Harley into Ring of Honor.
Good reps for both of them on Ring of Honor. Can't hurt. They both have talent for sure.
And if it has some legs, maybe carry it to the next pay-per-view or something, you know, for the end of the year.
Yeah.
You always need singles matches on your Ring of Honor big shows, so throw it on there if you can. And if it doesn't make it that far, then just have it be a TV main event or something like that.
I thought Harley was another one. She had a really good match in Cardiff.
Okay, yeah, I would agree. I think she's really consistent. I think it's funny. I think in people's heads, if they didn't see her wrestle regularly, they would just think she's probably just an annoying non-wrestler chick. But like, she actually is solidly good in the ring. So I think she would surprise some of those people. Jacoby Watts rose from the dead, Charlie, to fight Evil Uno. I didn't think this guy was still alive. Where the fuck's he been? But I guess it didn't really matter whether he was alive or dead because he got beat by Evil Uno anyway. So I guess we're pushing you to Evil Uno.
Those borderline squash match too.
It sucks, too, because I actually think Jacoby has something. It's kind of funny. Like, I think there's something there with that weird gimmick. I just don't know if they've scratched it yet. And maybe that's why they're just sitting on it, because they kind of did this with the Righteous for a little while, right? Where they just kind of let him cook for a little bit and didn't really do anything with it. But you get these, like, fleeting moments of, like, there's something there before they actually... So inevitably, what's going to happen is him and Camarado are going to get a shot at the Young Bucks and then lose. And then that's when they'll finally start doing something with them, just like both the other teams. But either way, Josh Woodson took on Barrett Brown. Quick little technical win here. I teased up a match on commentary against Lee Moriarty, potentially. That does seem like something that would be good to do, potentially. I don't know if it's going to be anytime soon, so, you know, but we'll see. Layla Gray also had a match on this show. Again, relatively quick win got picked up here. Solid stuff.
A lot of just meaningless kind of quick matches.
Which we makes like a lot of sense, given that this was the last taping in Arlington. They probably just kind of like were running through. I'm sure both the wrestlers and, I mean, it depends on when they taped what in what order, right? But assuming they taped all this in the same, like in the order that it was released in, you know what I mean? Which I have no idea if that's how they do it or not.
They probably just put all these in between like their big Dustin Rhodes tapings. Because I doubt they did all of those in chronological order.
Yeah, I have no idea.
You got to save that for the end.
We'll just assume that, you know, by this point, there probably were there's some of these matches that people were just done wanting to move on. You know?
Yeah, it felt like there's like maybe 40 people in the fucking crowd.
Yeah, Blake Christian, who we haven't seen in a little while, obviously because of his run in New Japan. You know, took on Rosario Grillo here of the Nightmare Factory. He had some vicious arm breakers and stuff on him, and he had like a really great 450 quick win. But he looks fucking ready to cook, dude. Blake Christian looks hungry, and Tomohiro Ishii took on Arya Daivari. Another example of how great Tomohiro has been on AEW. I keep going back to this thing, Charlie. I really hope that AEW somehow ends up signing Ishii. You know what I mean? Like, and if Ishii wanted to finish out his career in AEW, I genuinely think he would have a super easy time and he would be really, really over. I really would like to see him in AEW. I don't know if it's realistic, but I think it'd be cool.
Yeah.
Lee Moriarty took on Angelico for the Ring of Honor Pure Championship. They gave Lee the first rope break here, and by that I mean he got costed his first rope break first. And I was thinking at first, like, does that play? And I was like, no, here's the thing. We, at least on this podcast, think of Angelico as like a Mexican submission wrestling expert, right? So it's a different style than what Lee is used to. So I could see that catching him off guard. That actually does kind of make sense. You know what I mean? Like, not that it would matter if it didn't.
How it could catch him off guard.
Yeah, like you're used to wrestling like Western, or I guess Western, I guess that's Western, like American style pro wrestling or even Japanese style pro wrestling. And it's a different style of technical wrestling, right? You know what I mean? So not that it's really different, but there's different aspects of it that you would have to learn to focus on in order to keep, like in Japan, you might have to be able to hit really hard. And in America, you might have to be able to catch a flash pin or something like that. Or maybe that's more of a lucha thing, whatever, you know what I mean? But there's like different things.
Yeah.
I do think this lacked energy at points, the match, which is maybe a little bit sad because I like both of them. I saw what they were going for. He attacked the shoulder, ends up picking up the win. You know, it's too early in Lee's title reign to really do any dramatic things with it. So they just kind of rolled the match, and that's fine. But I mean, I don't know. I really want Lee to, I got to say, my biggest issue with this so far is I feel like this championship run is doing anything for Lee so far. I want them to, I don't know how to get there. I don't know how to make this feel like it's making Lee feel more important, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe he needs to pick up some wins against some more legit people. And maybe that's the plan. Maybe he's going to beat a Nigel McGuinness. Maybe he's going to beat, you know, I don't know, pick your other favorite, a Zack Sabre Jr., somebody like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Maybe he can beat some of these guys and establish himself as more legit. But at this point, it feels like, okay, what's the, where's the plan? Like, again, I feel like maybe I should just shut up and listen sometimes, but like, I feel like that's where my brain is like, where are we going with this? You know, like, and I believe that was the end of Ring of Honor this week.
Yeah. I mean, he feels like an ideal, you know, pure champion. So I'm with you. Let's get some more legitness to it, if you will. Yeah, well put. Okay. Let's jump over to Dynamite then.
Dynamite.
John Moxley returns. It's a surprise, and I knew we were in for kind of a little bit of a weaker crowd when they didn't give two shits. So,
yeah, what the fuck? That was mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. Sometimes you got to call it out, and, you know, not our greatest crowd. Wait, for some reason, yet during Rampage, they were, like, louder. Whatever. Hey, sometimes, you know, you had to just sit there a while to really get the vibes of the show. Shivani's in the ring, asked him, you know, how you doing? Said he's doing a lot of thinking. Looking for a man who wasn't here, but it was a conversation that needed to be done. He's talking about Darby Allin. He told Allin that he wasn't hard to find. He interrupted Shivani and said, "This isn't your company anymore." Keep an eye out for that. I mean, right away, you know, you had the, we'll just call it the grifters running wild saying, "Incoming Shane McMahon. Here he comes. I'll believe it when I fucking see it." Shane McMahon is not coming.
We already told you all what the plan is if that happens.
Shane is not coming to this company.
If Shane McMahon comes to AEW
and becomes,
and let's be clear, and becomes an authority figure, and I don't mean like an on-screen authority figure because I'd even be willing to like see that out, right? But I don't think they would do that anyway. But and what I mean is if he comes in and it starts to be like a executive at the company, I'm out. I'm not watching this shit anymore. Sorry. But I just don't want to watch the McMahon's 2.0. Not interested, you know?
Not
even if it's on a light level. Even if Tony Khan shows me the contract and it says he has no actual power to make any changes without me approving it. You know, like, I don't trust that. I'm sorry. That's how the McMahons weasel their way in. No way. Absolutely not. And so we'll be a New Japan pod at that point. At least I'll be a New Japan pod at that point. I don't know what you're going to do, but I definitely will only be talking about New Japan at that point, you know?
Yeah. And again, it's very telling that as soon as this happened, because I was thinking something along the lines of almost similar to what happened, but I was like, okay, we're going to get a Moxley.
I know what this is. This is the actual storyline that's going to be good where they take down the EVPs. That's
exactly
what this is.
Where my brain was going. Is he going after the Elite? But you take one peek on Twitter and it's everyone taking pictures of the worst accounts you've ever seen saying, here comes Shane O'Mac. They're rooting for it to happen because they know what that means. And it's just like, you know, they'll never delete that shit. They're getting paid for it because, you know, grifting pays. You know, we can fucking post a crazy amount of fucking baiting tweets too and probably make a couple bucks off it. It's the way it fucking works.
Yeah, we have to be verified first.
Conglomeration was interviewed by Renee Paquette regarding their matches tonight. Mark Briscoe starts going nuts. Cowboy ass. He's going to whoop some cowboy ass. Tonight's word of the day is indefatigable.
Indefatigable.
Indefatigable. Unable to fatigue.
I think you were pronounced like indefatigable or something like that.
Indefatigable. Pretty awesome. Hangman Adam Page comes out, defeats Tomohiro Ishii. Fun match again, like I mentioned earlier.
You know what we need to do? We need to release a Mark Briscoe's dictionary.
Someone's keeping note of that. They have to. If not, someone get on that.
You know, AEW does terrible merch options, so you know they jump on that shit instantly.
This was a fun match. Hard hitting. Tomohiro Ishii's doing neck bumps in the opening.
Charlie,
match.
Are you going to buy yourself a $200 swerve leather jacket?
I have four of them. But yeah, no. Really good stuff here. Prime Excalibur. I knew we were in for a good night with him when he's opening the match, getting excited by this. Just a really good, exciting opening match. And if this is it for Ishii's summer excursion in AEW, hey, great job bringing him in. And I think that sets a precedent for going forward if they want to do these with more people in New Japan. You know, maybe we get one of these with Tanahashi, right? You never know. Maybe we get one with, we've done this with Minoru Suzuki. Maybe we get one of the young kids over here for a summer, right? You know, maybe they don't make the G1 based on God knows what. I think the next one should be Taichi. I would really like for him to get a run. And I think it'd be fun. He wasn't even in the G1 this year, so there's precedent for him not to be in it next year. And if he could get a little excursion to AEW, I think people would be blown away by the matches he could have. So Swerve came out, made a challenge to Hangman Page. They had a fun little promo battle back and forth, setting up their match inside a steel cage. Crowd really not caring, and it kind of breaks my heart. Because, man, the crowd should be eating the shit up. I was eating it up. So we jumped to a match of Jamie Hayter defeating Harley Cameron with Saraya. Welcome back, Chance. Hayter looks really cool. So she looks awesome.
Bro, people are fucking... I don't know where this is coming from. She's getting a shit ton of... I've seen a shit ton of hate on Twitter and stuff like that since the return.
It's probably those people saying, oh, you stole orange hair. You're not Becky Lynch. Who do you think you are?
Yeah, fucking Great Value Becky was immediately posted within like 5 minutes of fucking when I saw that shit on fucking later the night of All In, you know what I mean? Like, I was like,
yeah,
this is really what we're doing, y'all. This is your first response to the returners of somebody who's been
You're
out
not
for
allowed
fucking...
to have fun. Don't you know this? But she looked good here. Her big boot looked great. The Haterade Lariat, she fucking nailed the fuck out of Harley with that thing. Short, sweet match. Get her back into the fold. I'm cool with that. Renee was backstage with Chris Jericho, and I am the learning tree. He's just yapping.
It truly was just yapping here, honestly.
There's nothing here. I'm skimming this right now. There's nothing here.
You're just talking about, yeah, Hook, good job. You won your championship back.
Good job, buddy. We had a week recap of Will Ospreay's win over MJF. MJF comes out. Talk shit, and he threatens Daniel Garcia. Out comes Daniel Garcia. He applied a guillotine on MJF, choked him out cold, lifted MJF up for a pile driver, had second thoughts. Garcia put him on the top rope, looked like he was going to hit an avalanche pile driver. Out comes security. Short-lived, Garcia batters MJF, and Christopher Daniels came out. Pretty cool. Daniel Garcia, during all this scuffle, grabs the microphone. He said he pawned off MJF's Dynamite Diamond ring for a round trip to London. He asked if MJF thought that was bad. That's nothing compared to being stretchered out while his grandmother watched. He said that seeing MJF suffer was his new fetish. All Garcia wants is to ruin MJF's life, which is why he asked Tony Khan to grant him a match against Friedman at All Out. He said beating him in a match isn't enough. Dropping MJF on his head will bring him satisfaction. He fucking lunges the microphone, doinks MJF in the fucking head.
The immaculate reception of the mic.
Come on. This is what I'm talking about. Danny. This guy's a star.
You know what we need to do? We need to get the cameras from the NFL that they have that track the ball through the air.
Daniel Garcia is the complete fucking package. He has all the bit of charisma that you would want. Right? And then he's out here cutting this fucking promo. I believed every word he said. I believe he pawned that Dynamite Diamond ring. Of course MJF lost it because it was stolen. This was fucking brilliant. What'd you think of our boy Danny cutting the best promo of the night on fucking AEW? Come on.
I thought it was awesome. I didn't expect this to get some kind of follow-up. I didn't expect it to be this intense. And I'm glad that we're just rolling straight into this storyline. And I assume this will be like a long-term thing. This will probably go over multiple pay-per-views. This could be something that we're talking about at the end of the year still. I'm really excited to see where they take this. Yeah. This could go into next year, honestly. You know, like...
We get our all-star eight-man tag, Hook, Cassidy, Kyle, Mark Briscoe, the conglomeration plus Hooker, defeating Chris Jericho, Big Bill, Brian Keith, and the honorary Learning Tree member, Roderick Strong. Call him the Chop Man. Call him Axel Chop. I don't know. just an absolute shit show in the ring. There's nothing more to describe it. I don't think it was actually particularly good, but it wasn't bad. It was just a shit show. I don't know how else to describe this match, man. Like, the Big Bill follow-up and Hook follow-up, that was never going to be good in America, unfortunately. Backstage, Mercedes Moné hosting a party for another successful TBS championship win. Private Party appears, and Isaiah Cassidy spitting game at Mercedes. She doesn't seem too interested, but her match against Momo Watanabe at New Japan Capital Collision, they're talking about that, so a little quick advertisement plug. And Okada's there. Ah, shit. You don't fuck with Okada. You got a wife at home, bro. What are you doing?
Nah, he's valid.
Valid. Mariah May comes out to introduce the world to the glamour, her AEW Women's Championship celebration. Shivani introduced her, congratulates her for her win. New champion took the mic. She said that it was postponed because she wasn't doing it in Champagne, because it should be called Flat and Stale. Bruh. She said the women of this town desperately needed some glamour, and she can provide that. She's about to take off her robe, show it off to everyone. She takes it off. Women's world title around her waist. She looks like $1 million. The glamour has arrived. We'll get word from the grizzled young vets after All In as they were confronted by the Bucks. Said they're here to stay in AEW. Yes! They're coming for the tag team champions. Bucks needed to grit their teeth when they saw GYV coming. They got a match on Rampage Friday. Hype package for Takeshita. And then we jump into the main event. The main event match, that is. And at this point, I've wrote something down here. I said, this was very, very good. We still had our wrestling, right? We had our fucking strong hitting wrestling. But I think this is the kind of show that someone that's never seen AEW before, I had a feeling they would actually really, really like this show. And if, say All In was the first thing they ever watched, right? Because there's plenty of people that's the case. They will watch the biggest show and then check out what's after. So it's important to hit a home run on the show. I think with how they ran this show, it was still very AEW. I'm not trying to say it wasn't. But it was so story heavy, like in your face promo, backstage story heavy, that I think a casual fan watching for the first time, they might have actually really enjoyed this show. And it's a good light introduction to AEW. Where then if they wanted to watch later in the week, you know, watch Collision to see what AEW is truly all about, right? This was kind of like a nice soft tee up. So I thought this was actually a really important show following All In to capitalize on all the storylines that they did. That being said, we had to follow up our debut from All In, being Ricochet taking on and defeating Kyle Fletcher. We've gone over before about how Kyle Fletcher has literally had the match with every big dog in AEW. Whether it's Kenny Omega, Bryan Danielson, Swerve Strickland, MJF, Kazuchika Okada. He hasn't had it with Will Ospreay yet because they have that close connection, but he soon will. He has succeeded in all these matches. I don't think this match was unbelievable, but I thought this was a good debut. And Kyle Fletcher proving yet again, no matter who you stick him out there with, he's going to look like he belongs. So, you know, we often call these guys like blue chip prospects, right? He already was a blue chipper in a tag team. Now he's become one in a singles act. I'm very excited. Kyle Fletcher's one of those guys you need to lock down, for starters, just like your Daniel Garcias. Let them grow with the company. You know, you don't want to be looking like Chelsea out here and go buy an 800 fucking
players. The nice thing about Kyle is that him and fucking Mark both signed, I think, like a decently long-term deal because of how pissed they were at New Japan. So, like, you've got them locked down for at least a little bit, and you have a good amount of time to make them feel like they're, like, used, you know?
We can bring in all these new toys, like Ricochet, who looked like Ricochet in this, you know? There was a little sequence that I wasn't the biggest fan of, but all in all, he still looked really good. He looked passionate. I mean, he looked very passionate. That's got to be the word of his debut. I mean, him, like, fucking, you know, throwing the little suck it at the camera. I mean, he is clearly fired up. And, yeah, I thought this was a fun debut. Any thoughts on Ricochet's first, you know, kind of outing as a singles match where he gets the win in the main event of Dynamite in his debut match? His debut singles match, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a really solid first appearance for TV, you know?
Yeah.
Which I think was really important. They also did address the Will versus Ricochet stuff in this segment, which I think is good, because I think not acknowledging it would have been silly, but obviously you could get away with that. You could get away with that in wrestling, just them not acknowledging each other's existence until they're both free up, right?
But as we've talked about before, and maybe people haven't heard this before, all wrestling lore is lore in AEW. Right away, they acknowledged it. What Seth Rollins, whether it was, you know, we have our own version of you, Will Ospreay, and he's here. His name's Ricochet. Right? Whether it's that, whether it's their famous match from 2015 that literally destroyed wrestling Twitter. It destroyed the IWC.
It caused so much controversy that stuff that's not even like tangentially related to the kind of wrestling they were doing in that match gets called that now because of how much of an impact that
had. It kind of changed the way wrestling is viewed, honestly. And how that they, it was more... That was like the fantastical elements of a fucking wrestling match.
That was the first time I ever heard somebody that was an old school wrestling fan use the term of a dance to describe, or like choreography to describe.
Dude, you end up getting that actual match between Vader and Ospreay because Vader, at the time, you know, he went out and was like, what, this is not wrestling, shit like that. And, you know, I think it was partially him working because it did work because he had the cool match with Ospreay.
Yeah, he probably saw what Ospreay was doing in that and he was like,
and
oh my god.
He put Ospreay over.
I have to have a wrestling. I might be retired, but I have to wrestle this guy. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So I think part of that was working and, you know, rest in peace, of course. But, you know, like you said at the end here, we get Ospreay walking out, kind of set that up. And Pac, that fucking bastard, sneaks up, boom, hits that poison run on him. Welcome Ricochet to AEW, gets to the back of the line. So I'm curious to see where Ricochet fits in. I'll tell you what. We were just wondering earlier, what can we do with Takeshita? Fuck it. Let's get an exhibition match. Takeshita versus Ricochet at the pay-per-view. Let him go nuts.
30-minute time limit draw.
Yeah, who says no? Moxley was asked what he meant earlier in the night. Walked up some backstage personnel. Marina Shafir appears. They start attacking backstage personnel. This was a lesson in humility as he walked off. Marina shoved the camera to the ground before she, too, also walked
me out. If her first fucking massive win in her career is knocking off the CEO to become the TBS championship, that will make Marina Shafir's career.
Yes, and I think the seeds have been here for a long time of her getting into something big. Now, I think we're of two things here. This is clearly a heel route for Moxley. Bryan Danielson is the ultimate babyface. Yes, they're in the same group. He did not interact at all with Bryan Danielson here. Are we seeing him break off from the BCC? Are we perhaps seeing formation within the BCC? Is the BCC just gonna die? God, I hope not. But I would be down with some civil war aspects of maybe Claudio and Wheeler don't agree with this and they want to bring Pac into the fold, but he doesn't like what Pac is and this and that, you know. We could have some fun aspects with that of a storyline over the winter, maybe. But yeah, I think something AEW doesn't do enough of is intrigue storylines like this. You know, we had the really cool one with the Elite then, and it didn't land as successful as many of us hoped at all by any means. But you know, when they knocked out Tony Khan, we had that intrigue. Now with what Jon Moxley's doing, I think this is something that we did need. So, yeah, I mean, do you think Marina's joining the Combat Club? Do you think this is something else? Like, where are you kind of aligning with this right now?
I mean, if we're thinking about, like, female wrestlers, like, if we're not molding them in the mold of Bryan Danielson, if we're molding them more in the mold of actual fighters, I mean, she kind of fits the mold.
Brawlers like Moxley, perhaps the greatest brawler of all time.
Perhaps. Yeah, I mean, I think it fits. I think if she is, it fits. I kind of more of along the lines of you. I think this is kind of the final act of the BCC. We're going to watch it shatter into pieces and...
I hope it's not,
unfortunate,
but
if Bryan is done after, you know, mostly done with his career after he loses the title, doesn't know how long, we don't know how long that, he could hold the title for a year, you know what I mean? We don't know, right? But But if it is a shorter-lived title reign, then it would kind of fit that everything that Bryan built is sort of a house of cards that's collapsing. As soon as you pull out the card at the bottom that is Bryan Danielson, the whole thing kind of falls apart, you know? Like, and I feel like that would be a very poignant way for him to exit the wrestling industry, even though he wouldn't really fully be exiting, but it would be a very poignant way for things to end, would be for everything that he tried to build to still get torn down by the system that he was trying to fight the whole time in the end. You know what I mean? Like, which would be sad, but also very resonant with how it goes in real life a lot of times. You know what I mean? It's not always the happy ending that you want, you know?
Yeah. It'll be fun to follow. And speaking of Bryan Danielson, he closes our show. Fans are chanting, "You deserve it." He said that after trying and failing repeatedly, AEW, he is now AEW World Champion. He said he had over 50K people at Wembley Stadium. His family saw his biggest moment, and his daughter said this was the best day of her life. When he saw his peers congratulating him in the back, he knew this was the biggest moment of his entire career. He was asked what's next at the conference. He leveled us by saying his contract expired August 31st. He'll need neck surgery. His family is ready for him to come home soon. He's loved pro wrestling his entire life. AEW's existence has made pro wrestling better and his own life better. Isn't that a fact? AEW's existence, whether you fucking hate it or not, it has made wrestling better. And that's just facts, especially for the wrestlers. He says that it's not time to go home yet. He'll fight for the AEW championship as hard as he can. However, if he loses the belt, it's going to be all over. He's got a lot of heads to kick in. Throws out an open challenge to All Out. Scapegoat Jack Perry interrupts. Perry said that his future is to be world heavyweight champion, to retire the American Dragon. Dennis's future is behind him, and he hits a sneak attack. He hits a running knee behind him, raises both titles to end the show. Booze rained down on the scapegoat. We're getting scapegoat live in Chicago against Brian Sweet. Danielson. Yeah. So I think this is a perfectly fun first challenger for him. I don't think by any means Jack Perry's going to win, but this benefits Jack Perry just being in the match.
That would be a hell of a fucking shock move to put it on Jack Perry, dude.
And
that
would be a shit my pants.
Big fucking endorsement of Jack Perry to make him a Seth Rollins-esque double champion, beating Bryan Danielson to send him fucking packing.
Whoa, the heat, there's something there. I don't know.
The heat, brother. Jesus. Yeah. So that was Dynamite. Again, another A show. Like, Dynamite knocked it out of the park. Dynamite's swinging, you know, if it's baseball, they're batting better than the entire fucking league right now in our...
Oh, yeah, we're like a 425 average right now.
Yeah, we ain't no White Sox over here. Sorry, guys. Jeff Jarrett, and we're jumping into Rampage now, of course. But
nah, if I was going to be a Chicago fan, Cubbies all the way.
Oh, of course. Jeff Jarrett, Jay Lethal, won a three-way over the Undisputed Kingdom and Private Party. Again, sadness ensues. Private Party are just... They're in forever fucking turmoil right now. They were the best parts of this match. Jay Lethal was very, very good in this match, too. Let me clarify. It just... This was fun, but very disappointing in the winter. It feels like we're never gonna be able to see it happen, and I hope we're wrong. You know, Mina Shirakawa with her Rev Pro Women's Championship belt around her, the queen.
But can I say, I feel so fucking bad that I ended up being right about that. Because I was saying for months, there's no way they're doing anything with these guys. And I started to believe you after a while. I thought there's like no way they'd keep using them if they weren't going to do. I'm mind blown at this point. What? What is Private Party? You know, dude, honestly, this is going to sound insane. Private Party might be one of the only teams that would actually only benefit if they were to leave and go somewhere else. Because they're very good.
Oh my god, yes. They absolutely would benefit if they went to NXT for right now.
Like, they'd be one of the... It might be the biggest act in NXT with their style. Shit. You know, like...
And in a year where tag team wrestling has unfortunately been down, like, I think when it's all said and done, I was kind of telling you this the other night, I think the tag team of the year and all the awards at the end of the year, it's going to be Axiom and Nathan Frazier in NXT. And that's a fucking shot at you, New Japan. That's a shot at you, AEW. That's a shot at you.
Oh, I was WWE. No, I said this. I don't know if this was a follow up to the conversation we had, but I was listening to Joseph Montecillo's end of mid year awards, and he was even talking about the tag team of the year that wins this year. Unless something drastic happens in the last half of the year, it's going to be the least argument ever for a tag team of the year because tag team wrestling has been so down this year. You know, like across
it's
the board,
only Nathan Frazier and Axiom have raised their stock this year. That's it.
That's kind of insane.
Nathan Frazier's got people in the upper echelons of WWE already being like, yeah, we got something special here. That's, of course, Seth Rollins.
Young Bucks are not even in the conversation this year. Fucking FTR barely scratched the surface of the conversation. Yep. I think there might be an argument for the Bang Bang Gang and fucking like House of Black making it in there. It depends on if you include trios or not, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, it's so hard because it feels like they haven't move their own needle.
I think AEW has done better trios work this year than they have regular tag team wrestling. It depends on all. Again, it depends on if you could say
that's going to be something fun to talk about at the end of the year.
Oh, 100%.
We're doing our awards. We got a trio now, so you know that'll be cool.
I was wondering. Hear me out. Should we add an award for TV Wrestler of the Year?
Sure, we can do that.
Because I feel like
sneak Robbie Allen an award for me right now. He'd be my leader right now.
I think for me, it would probably be Buddy Matthews. You know what I mean? Because yeah, I think across TV, he's had some of the most consistent work for me all year. So I was thinking about that when I was looking at our favorite. We have a breakdown of all the favorites throughout the year, so we can like kind of look at that at the end of the year when we're looking for awards and stuff that.
We will reveal
to break
that,
ties and stuff
I'm
like
excited
that.
To do that.
Oh yeah, we're not going to reveal that. We'll break it all down for you guys when we do that show. But we have that. We have information now to reference, so that if you like are stuck and you need a tiebreaker or something like that, you have it right. But I think for me it would be Buddy, but I do think there should be an award like that. Maybe we don't necessarily call it TV Wrestler of the Year, but maybe it could be something like along those lines because
yeah. I mean,
there is a huge element of wrestling that we don't cover in our awards, which is the weekly television. We do give awards to the television shows, but we don't give them to individual wrestlers. And they are such a core part of what makes these pay-per-views even work, if you think about it.
Could you imagine if – I think it was the idea of they needed the Young Bucks to be on their all-in show, right? So they just wanted to hold the belts at them. But if they had just pivoted, given these belts to Private Party around June when they were really – when Quinn came back and Cassidy was doing his single stuff, looking good as a singles wrestler even though he's losing every fucking time. Yeah. In another universe maybe. But we got Grizzled Young Vets now. Mina Shirakawa picked up a quick squash. Statlander and Stokely had a quick little promo about Willow. Knocked her out with a stagehand. Yeah, Grizzled Young Vets took on and defeated the Outrunners. Really good trash talk from Zach Gibson here, of course. And yeah, the Outrunners, they're kind of slip on a banana peel and win kind of guys. But yet, they almost fucking did it to Gibson. And Gibson's reaction to it? Okay. It was fucking brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. That double elbow for a near fall? I knew there was no way that El Grizzled Young Veterans lose, but it had me for that split second. I was like, wait, hold on. Are we about to do a slip on a banana peel thing? His kick out was brilliant. Yeah, just really, it had a good amount of time, but it ended with Grizzled Young Vets. Drake hit him with a lariat and then finished him off with a high low on Magnum. So
hey, now that was quick. It's up Grizz without Riz.
Yep. Now the Rose quick squash match on Amina Belmont, spinning beast bomb. And then we already talked about the main event. So that was it for Rampage. Again, really, really incredible main event. Let's jump into AEW Collision episode 60, where the fucking show was incredible. Like, again.
Yeah, from Sioux Falls City. That's a absolutely fucking horrendously fucking obscure wrestling reference if you know it. But you probably don't know it. It's a reference to a promo that was cut like on Raw, I think fucking like 7-8 years ago by fucking R-Truth against Brock Lesnar when they were in Sioux Falls City. Anyway, because you know, Suplex City was the gimmick at the time. Anyway, so there's some
Suplex
wrestling.
Suplex City.
Yeah, you didn't think we'd ever mention Brock Lesnar again on here, but that piece of shit made it on somehow, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know,
hey. Paul Heyman carry. Come on, let's be real.
No, 100%. Hey, there was nothing. That guy had zero personality before they took Paul away from him. You know what I mean? Like, and even then, did he even have any, you know? But Orange Cassidy, Kyle O'Reilly, and Hologram took on Lee Moriarty, Johnny Chibi, and Beast Mortos in the most random assortment of trios fucking match of all time. But it was still good, so whatever. Yeah. Fuck it, we ball. You know what I mean? Hologram's still incredibly impressive, and I'm starting to refer to the Beast Mortos as the Mexico meat, because he is. And, yeah. So, good stuff there. The Bang Bang Gang took on the...
Give me Hologram and Beast Mortos consistently in these matches against each other. It's just...
I love the idea of having, like, a small rivalry there, because they're both up-and-coming lucha guys, and, like, they have a different but similar styles. You know what I mean? Like, I could see it. You need to build little rivalries like that. Like, I love that Deonna Purrazzo versus Thunder Rosa will probably be a rivalry like that. Probably MJF versus Adam Cole. Probably... assuming Adam Cole can come back as wrestler anytime soon, but you know, like that could probably be one, you know, if we, it's kind of like your Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens type, you know, they're just going to fight forever eventually, you know what I mean? And sometimes team together, but mostly fight, you know, Bang Bang Gang took on the Premier Athletes trios. It was fine. They beat him really quick, you know, solid work for the crowd. Basically we had a little recap of Capital Collision and Mercedes Moné called out basically the whole universe here. And, yeah, so she wants another challenger. You know, we're going to find out who that is later in the show. So, you know, she's just like, yeah, who the fuck it is, I don't care. Suck a dick, basically. You know what I mean? Hikaru Shida had a hype video for, you know, for the Fateful Way. We had like four of these across the show. I'm not sure if I wrote all of them down. If I missed one, let me know. We had a little recap video from All In London with the stuff with the Von Erichs and all that. And like the fucking cavalcade of a million people in the ring and stuff. Which we then led into FTR versus the Undisputed Kingdom.
Daxi Ax was chopping the wood here. I don't hate Taven and Bennett. They just need to like be freed of the undisputed stuff, and then I think they'll be way better off.
This match was a stinker for what it should have been.
Yeah. FDR just good.
What it should have been. Like, yeah. No.
The meat here was Drake and Gibson attacking after the bell, so that'll probably be their first feud. Will be with FTR. Yeah, that'll be a fun feud, right? Maybe? Hopefully.
Save Collision next week, maybe.
Either or. We could do both. Fuck it, we ball.
Yeah. Let's get a best of seven with them. Let them beat FTR 4-3.
Here's what you do. You do it next week on Collision. Time limit draw. Run it back on the pay-per-view. Boom.
Okay.
Oh, wait, you can't do that because they air on the same day. Hold on. You can't.
No, it's Friday. It airs.
Yeah, never mind. You can then do that. Fuck it. We ball. Main event. There you go. There's your Collision main event for next week. Time limit. Fuck, 30-minute time limit draw. There you go. Boom. Perfect. Anyway, but yeah, it books itself, really. And we got a Thunder Rosa video package here. We got a little bit of violence from Mr. Lance Archer. He's just pissed. I don't know why he's so pissed, but he just wants to murder everyone. Top Flight and Leo Rush took on the Outrunners and the Iron Savages. Again, random tag team assortment here, but whatever.
I love seeing our boys win, though.
Yeah, it had a lot more energy than other tag.
I love seeing these four as a tag.
But yeah, and seeing Leo in the fucking Top Flight fucking like pilot gimmick was actually kind of, I don't know, yes. It fucking worked. I don't know. Like, I love it. I love that he's embracing all of it. It's great. You know what I mean?
Oh, man.
This is how I pictured shit. Maybe not the airplane gimmick, right? But besides the airplane gimmick, this is how I pictured it being back when they were teasing it up originally. We just never got there.
And they've found the fourth partner since then. Action Andretti and now added Leila Gray. This feels
like something. Right combo.
This should be special. Like, I really, really hope. And giving them wins on Collision and giving them still in their solo spots is very important. We need – God, I just love Collision so much. Every fucking match you're going through right now, I'm like
– Oh, yeah.
I love this team so much. Dare I say, Top Flight has kind of been the first thing that really hooked me in when we started doing the show. And I was like, you know what? Dante was carrying AEW Dark for us. Absolutely carrying it. I didn't even know he had a brother at the time because he was injured. And to where we fell in love with the storyline with him and Leo and Seidel. And here we are now. It's like, I want to protect this team so much. I can't believe they're back with Leo. It still just makes me so excited.
It's one of those, I thought that was going to go down as like one of the biggest fumbles in Tony Khan's history. And I think it still does. I think the fact that we didn't get this like 2 years ago, it's really sad and could have done a lot for Dante's career. Right. You know what I mean? But given how things went, who knows what would have happened, right? So I'm just really glad that we get to see it now. It makes me really excited for the future, and there's so much opportunity.
If we can't give Private Party the belts, give it to Top Flight and just let the other guys also be their own thing.
Yeah,
there's so many options, man. There's so many options.
You do say, I mean, that's kind of what I was about to say is like, there's options. You could do feuds out of this. You could do stories out of this. You could do, I mean, just again, there's a million options that you have here. Okay, so we go from that into Lexi backstage, who's interviewing both Queen Aminata and Serena Deeb. And basically, Aminata is like, yeah, I'm badass. I'm going to beat you. I've beaten people in this match before, blah, blah, blah. And Serena's like, well, I've also done that. And I have a proposal for you. We should work together. And if we do that, then maybe I'll teach you how to be a better wrestler. And she's like, about to be like, well, fuck that. I want to win. And she's like, nah, don't even answer. Just think about it. So I guess that was supposed to be a little bit of intrigue kicking into the match. I didn't buy it for a second, but you know, hey, whatever.
Queen Aminata is the kind of woman you build a statue for.
I build a statue of, really.
Facts.
Honestly, she kind of is like a statue. She's got the like defined features of a statue already. You kind of could just like cast her in like a mold and then like just, you know, fill that in with some, you know, material that makes a statue, and it would already basically be perfect. But anyway,
oh my god, I forgot how great this next match is.
Yeah, and you actually, that's when you were saying earlier, I was like, if that's the end for Ishii, I was like, well, thanks.
I was kind of feeling like this week as a whole, I guess, is what I meant to say.
No, I'm with you on that. I just, you know, I was like, well, it's thankfully it wasn't, because I ended up getting a really great match on Collision to watch because of it. Hold on, can you just
stupid good.
Yeah, so Kyle Fletcher took on Tomohiro Ishii, and this was like just an absolutely fucking amazing match. Okay, so like I was like thinking in my head, I was going, on paper it's good, Ishii's been having some really good matches, but I expect this to just be a solidly like really quick win for Kyle. That was not what this was.
No.
Ishii immediately was like calling him out, like, come on, hit me, I want you to fucking have a New Japan match with me right now, you son of a bitch, we're doing the damn thing. Because I'm assuming this might have been a match the two of them wanted to have over there that they just never got to have the way they wanted to, possibly, you know. So
they went out there and wrestled like they were the fucking, they were at Corican Hall.
Oh, this is, they were the Corican Hall main event. That's the way they wrestle. You know what I mean? Like,
I could not believe how good this match was.
The way that it opens with them screaming at each other at the top of their lungs as they forearm the shit out of each other. That's one of the greatest openings to a wrestling match that I can ever remember.
So
and
good.
Then after that, Ishii's like, okay, so the kid's got the stones to actually wrestle with me. So then he starts just chopping the shit out of him in the corner. And they just had phenomenal back and forth, and the timing was perfect. This was a New Japan quality match and an AEW TV match that we just randomly got in the middle of a damn collision. This is why when we talk about the quality of collision, this is what we mean. Because this is just a random match before the main event of collision. There's going to be more matches after this, you know what I mean? Like, or a match, I should say. You know what I mean? Like, this is like just so random, and I love it. You know what I mean? It's very good, and I love, like, you know, I just love how good Kyle is. And this is a really good W for his resume, having beaten Tomohiro Ishii on a random, you know, I shouldn't call it random, on an episode of Collision, you know what I mean? And I love everything to do with this. The turnbuckle spot where he throws him into the bottom turnbuckle, bro, that was absolutely brutal. Did you have any thoughts on this match, Charlie, before I move on? Like, Jesus.
Yeah, no, it was just so much fun. And it's just one of those, we have to now add this to our list of Kyle Fletcher matches where we're just like, okay,
this week, straight up.
Yeah, easily. Like, this was honorary favorite fucking number five for us. Just brutally done. He put away the stubborn stone pit bull, and it was very, very well done. Just, you can capitalize this in one word, slugfest, right? And you already know what kind of match you're getting. Highly, highly recommend anyone check this out if they skipped Collision. Very, very, you do yourself a favor.
100%. We got our Aminata video package here. Good stuff. Already talked about Buddy Matthews versus
that,
Commander.
That's
a good, they were all pretty good video packages, I would say. You know what I mean? It did help build some hype for the match, too, because by the time we got there, I was, like, ready for it. You know what I mean? We had the Buddy Matthews versus Commander match. Then we had our Sarita Deeb video package. As we said, those were all really good. And then that led us straight into our main event. Hikaru Shida versus Sarita Deeb versus Queen Aminata versus Thunder Rosa that was the one that I missed. Thunder Rosa had one earlier in the show as well. And this was an opportunity at the TBS Championship at All Out. Mm-hmm. And so a number one contenders match, but they don't really call them that in AEW most of the time. But sometimes they'll use that terminology, so I use it. Something about collision main events, man, they just hit different. And this is no exception to that rule. All four of these women, I believe, showed why they are considered for this opportunity at All Out. It's a massive win for Shida. It's going to be a massive match. Unfortunately, I mean, maybe the idea here is that she's going to get cheated out of the win and they're going to continue the story. But this is one of those ones that I do wish we had some time to tell the story with Mercedes with. And again, maybe we will. Maybe that's the plan. But as it is right now, I do wish we had gotten a little bit because of how brilliant the stuff with Britt was. You know what I mean? Like, I think it could reach a level. You know what I mean? Like, but maybe we'll get there. But we have to, you know, at least get through All Out first. So I'm sure they're going to have a phenomenal match. But Charlie, did you have any thoughts on this match, the result, or the match at All Out?
Again, and we put the focus on the women's wrestling throughout the night with the video packages for each and every person building up to this main event match on a night where not a single match missed on Collision, not a single one missed. And this one also delivered that it felt important. All four of them deserved it. They've all been either winning or, you know, deserve that spot. I really like this. Nigel McGuinness selling certain points really added to that. I enjoyed him a lot on commentary. And a couple weeks ago when we covered the Hikaru Shida and Mercedes Moné match, I enjoyed the match, right? But the main takeaway was it felt like there could have been more. And if they had another match, I feel like we would get more. Well, I believe a month later from that match, we're getting them on a pay-per-view. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see how that goes. And let's jump right into doing our all-out predictions then, huh? So let's kick things off here. You'll take the lead as the first opening match. We only have six, so there's going to be more added, I'm sure. But Will Ospreay versus Pac for the AEW International Championship. What do you got?
Lord Willard.
I'm with you. I got Will. I think this match is going to be awesome, but I feel like Will's pretty locked in here. All right, Chicago Street Fight for the CML Award.
That'll get a different kind of viewership in there.
I got Willow Nightingale versus Chris Statlander. I got Willow retaining her CMLL Women's World Championship.
Chicago Street Fight, live on OnlyFans.
Yeah, right? Who you got for this one?
Probably Willow. I mean, I don't know why they would have Stat win here. I don't feel like that. Do you know what's so strange about this Stat Stokely thing? Is I feel like it's got no like legs to it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like, I don't know. I just don't know where you're going to go with it after this. I don't know. It's just not that. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is with Stokely. He just gets kind of stale.
It's perfectly fine. It's nothing. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's great. I just think it's perfectly fine. It's a fine storyline.
But yeah, I'd probably take Willow.
Yeah. Swerve Strickland versus Hangman Adam Page steel cage match.
I mean, considering he cost him the championship, I'm going to go with Swerve here. I guess it depends on if you want to continue the feud or not, you know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, even if you do, though, you probably still have Swerve win.
Fight forever. Winner doesn't matter for that, in my opinion.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah, either way.
Swerve, I'm with you. I got Swerve myself.
Yeah.
MGF versus Daniel Garcia singles match.
God damn it. Daniel Garcia better fucking win.
I'm going Daniel. Yep. 100%. I don't see how you write this storyline and don't have Daniel win this one. He has to get a one-up on Max in terms of a match. And beating Max will be something he can catalyst into a championship. Seriously, like that's the kind of level that Max is.
The longest reigning world champion in history. I mean, you better get a shot into that. Come on.
You can, you know, give us Daniel Garcia versus Danielson, right?
Battle of the Daniels.
You got Danny also?
Yes.
Hikaru Shida versus Mercedes Moné for the AEW TBS Championship.
Mercedes retains.
I'm with you. I'm going to have Mercedes retain. I don't think it's as crystal clear as it felt like for Britt Baker match. I do think the temptation to give Shida the belt here probably and maybe move Mercedes on to Mariah. I could see that temptation. But
she would be the first one to hold both championships, right? So
yep. So
that would be pretty big.
I could definitely see.
Shida is the kind of person they randomly put the title on for absolutely no reason sometimes. So I could see it.
Yeah.
It could be a couple weeks too. You know what I mean? Then she's literally gone back to Japan right after. You know what I mean? Like, but like, I'm not against that idea. I do think it will be Mercedes, like I said, because.
Agreed.
It just makes a lot of sense. I'm not sure what else you're going to do with Mercedes. Like, I feel like when Mercedes loses this title, kind of similarly to when Jade lost the title, there's so much aura around this championship run. You kind of have to have Mercedes take a little bit of time off afterward. You know what I mean? Like. Or maybe you don't. I don't know. But that's how it works in my head. Like, I feel like it's been such a big deal. The lead up and winning and then the aftermath of her winning this championship. Like,
yeah.
In a lot of ways, it's a bigger story than what's going on with Mariah May. No offense to Mariah May. But, you know, like it's kind of the truth.
We still don't have a contender for her. We should probably get one this week if we're going to do something with her. And then our main event match. Career-threatening match for the AEW World Championship. I'm assuming every match is going to be that for Bryan Danielson. Where he's facing Jack Perry here. I think this is a retain. This is a really good first retention for him. And I think the match is going to be unbelievable. Scapegoat on pay-per-view. Don't miss.
Scapegoat versus real goat. I think Bryan retains as well.
Yeah. So we're 6-for-6 with our predictions. I think this seems pretty like one of those shows where I think, I mean, look, hey, they could toss the surprises, right? Like Shida.
I think this is the true issue with booking a show 2 weeks after other show.
Yeah.
Like, is that you're just either you have two options. Either you're booking All Out, like, during the lead up to All In, and so there are inevitably going to be matches that people want to see on All In that they're not going to get for 2 weeks, right? Or you have this scenario where you don't have anything booked that's really got any flavor because you don't have enough time, which is why I think they should have a month break between these and somehow figure it out in the schedule.
And then from this, I mean, when's Grand Slam? I mean, it's not even that far away.
Yeah, but that's a show you can just book like a normal
September
Dynamite.
September 20th. It's 2 weeks after. 3 weeks after.
Is that the one in Australia or is that next year?
That's next year. This is the one
in New York or whatever.
Yeah. It's the 25th actually. So about four Dynamites away. So yeah. Which we know Darby Allin's and a singles match for the AEW World Championship there. So. Yeah, at the end of the year for AEW gets
in crisis for predictions this week, by the way, because most of those channels like to get it out by Thursday, Friday. So unless they post it like literally like an hour after Collision on Friday or something like that, which for people in the UK would be like God knows what time. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think they're going to be fucked as well.
But yeah, on to All Out. We'll be here Saturday night talking the show with you guys. We do our live immediate reactions. If you're just joining us from All In, hope you really enjoyed our week-to-week show. We'll be back. Not next Tuesday, but we'll be back Saturday. And then, so thank you very much for hanging out. And hopefully, hopefully we see you next time. See it all out. Where fuck it. Scapegoat becomes world championship.
He becomes the championship. He doesn't even become world championship. Wow. You know, only one wrestler in the company I think Charlie could actually pull that off, and you know who it is.
Who could do that? You tell me.
It's
what are you? What?